WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number two of the program here on Monday morning. And as you can tell, I was having some vocal troubles during the break. So we can take more of your calls. We can take your app chat messages. We can take your open line voicemails. I did ask the question at the beginning of the show this morning. Anybody that's a Patriots fan, how do you feel about this firing of Gerard Mayo? I think even people like myself who thought, hey, it's good that they're giving this guy a chance, that, you know, they're keeping it in the Patriot family, even if it's not somebody kind of considered to be the next in line from the Bill Belichick coaching tree. It's a guy who can identify with the younger players and who can, you know, bring the culture of the team into the 2020s. Even I was like a little bit concerned with, does he have enough experience? But I still thought it was the right move at the time. But it became pretty clear over the course of the season that Gerard Mayo was in over his head. That he needs a little bit more seasoning as a coordinator before he's ready to be a head coach. And I don't know what yesterday was about. I don't know if yesterday was they couldn't figure out a way to lose but make it look like they weren't trying to lose, or if it was that Gerard Mayo might have known that he was going to get fired and said, you know what, you're going to fire me, I'm going to win this game. I mean, it wasn't like the Bills wanted to win either. Because the last thing they wanted to do was hand their division rival a number one pick. So the whole thing was just kind of screwy to begin with. But now where do the Patriots go from here? Of course, there's a lot of talk about how Mike Vrabel would be the perfect fit. But is Mike Vrabel going to cure what ails this team? I'm sure from afar, Bill Belichick is probably sitting back and saying, like, yeah, we'll see. I could have gone 4-13 with that team. I probably could have gone better than 4-13 with that team. And maybe that's true. But it was interesting to see Robert Kraft's comments after the firing of Gerard Mayo, where he said basically, like, you know, it's my job to get us back into championship contention as quick as possible. And with that in mind, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. I've got to act fast here. I can't languish on making these decisions. And does that make the next guy, the next person to come in as the head coach of this team nervous to know that that's Kraft's mentality? That if you don't win, you might be one and done too. So it'll be interesting to see what, because they're definitely going to have to do a better search than they did last time. Last time was very quickly they anointed Gerard Mayo the next in line. And I think because of the fact that they were hiring a minority coach, they thought they could circumvent the Rooney rule a bit there. And so they didn't have as thorough a search as they should have, and that might have cost them. It might have cost them a chance to get some interviews with who they think might have been somebody to keep an eye on or somebody who might have been good to bring in as a coordinator. So I think you'll see a little bit more in-depth of a process this time around, but I could be wrong. I mean, who knows? They could announce a new coach today because I've been wrong before. And do I think Jerod Mayo was the problem this season? I think in a lot of these games he was. And I think the offensive play calling was. So I'm not surprised that Alex Van Pelt is gone as well. But they must have also had conversations with Drake May, the ownership, I mean, to know that we could move on to a different coordinator and not screw this guy up the same way Mac Jones got screwed up by having different coordinators. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But you don't have time to I mean, I guess you do have time. That's the thing. Is really, what clock are they up against except for their own expectations? So if you have to languish for 4 or 5 years, you can. You've got a young quarterback here who certainly has a few years before he gets into his prime, and so you do have time to build towards something. But you have a fan base that's not going to sit idly by and wait for that. And I think for the Crafts, it's just as much as a business decision as it is a football decision to say there were a lot of tickets that were up for sale from people. A lot of empty seats. And we don't want that to be the future. The fan base was willing to give us a grace period as we came out of the Tom Brady era and maybe even a grace period coming out of the Bill Belichick era, but they're not gonna give us that for long because they see what this quarterback can be. And while I think he didn't really have enough weapons on the field and didn't have enough protection on the field, they also know that he should be able to win them games in spite of that. But he's got to be put in the right positions, and they feel like Jerod Mayo wasn't doing that. So, and I think everybody likes Jerod Mayo. He was a great guy in the locker room. He was a great guy covering, you know, when I covered the team. He was always great to deal with. Hell of a player. He could break down the game very well when he was doing the show with Tom Curran. But it just didn't work out. And I'm sure he'll get another chance to be a head coach somewhere down the line, and he'll be much better at it the next time around. But this time it just didn't work out. So now it's time to move on. So if you have any thoughts on that, I'll take those. 508-996-0500. And I talked earlier about how, you know, there's some folks who are saying, well, what's the big deal about losing the first pick? So you have number four. Number four can be just as good as number one. Well, this isn't the NBA, where that statement would be more or less true. We're talking about football, where the value in a pick is how many other picks you can turn it into. And when you already have a quarterback that you are happy with and that is your quarterback of the future, and you also have the number one pick, that opens up so many doors. Because so many teams that need that number one pick to get that quarterback that they need, they will give you the world for that pick. So you could end up with two or three first rounders, two or three second rounders. Like, you could get a haul for a number one pick. And fill a lot of positions of need with first round caliber talent. And they're not going to be able to do that now. chances are they'll just pick one player at number four, and that'll be it. So we can take your thoughts on that, 508-996-0500. Also, I don't know if you saw the story at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app, but the statue sculpture and design was announced on Friday for New Bedford's planned Herman Melville statue. And it's going to be titled Melville and Jonah's Journey. And it relates to Chapter 9 of Moby Dick, in which the priest is giving the sermon about Jonah and the whale. And that's being incorporated into this. So you've got Melville, but you've got what represents, you know, being inside kind of the belly of the beast. And it's a very interesting statue design. I think it'll look beautiful. And I think it's going to be perfectly situated outside of Siemens Bethel. And I'm looking forward to it. It'll be about a year to a year and a half before it's ready and installed. But I think it's going to be a destination point for a lot of people downtown. And you can see photos of it at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app, the different renderings. And it's amazing the work that they can do now with this computer-aided design to take this blueprint that the sculptor has created of this and make it look like as if it's already out in that location. And from every angle as well. So I think it's going to be something that the city can really be proud of and that visitors will want to take photos with. And it'll become a symbolic icon of the city. The sculptor, Stephanie Rothnark, was selected from 41 candidates. And she also designed the Edgar Allan Poe statue that's in Boston, as well as numerous other sculptures. But picked out of 41 other, I mean, to have that many folks submit designs and, you know, for the committee deciding it to go through all of those, I'm sure it was not an easy choice, but they made a great decision in the end, and I look forward to seeing the statue unveiled and being able to take some photos of it. 508-996-0500. I'm going to take a break here, and we'll be back in a few moments. Welcome back in, 508-996-0500. You know, the other day I was just kind of waiting on, I was waiting for an email to come in and just kind of killing some time and started watching some videos on YouTube and went back to somehow or another, I don't even know how I went down this rabbit hole, but it brought me back to that Freddie Mercury tribute concert that happened in the weeks following his death. And what an amazing concert that was. And you don't see enough about that anymore. I mean, I know that when they had the one of the anniversaries of it, I think they released it on DVD or on Blu-ray or something. But you don't really hear a lot of people talk about that. What a show. And I remember watching that live as it happened. And just being so impressed with, first of all, how quickly it was put together. But just how amazing all of the performances were. And like once-in-a-lifetime collaborations. Like Annie Lennox and David Bowie performing that song together. Just stellar. And some of those songs ended up, you know, being on the radio for a little while, but then they got forgotten about. I saw, I forget what show it is. I'm trying to think of what it is, but there's something coming up that's going to have a documentary on Live Aid. Which there's been a few of those over the years, but think about how much of a challenge it was to pull together an event like that in 1985 at a time when, you know, you didn't have the internet. You didn't have everybody globally connected like they are all the time. You had to coordinate everything over satellite and through phone calls. And you had Phil Collins, you know, playing in London and playing in Philadelphia in the same day, hopping the Concorde to be able to pull that off, to pull that feat off. And everybody coming together in multiple locations all at the same time without, you know, the easy coordination that we have today. It was pretty impressive logistically to pull off. And I think the last one they did was, you know, similar to that was, didn't they have one that they called like Live 8 that was done in conjunction with the G8 summit? But that was probably 10, 15 years ago at this point. I don't think they've done anything like that similarly that I'm aware of for a long time. I was watching something too last night on, I was watching Landman on Paramount Plus when I got home last night, just to eat dinner and watch something before I went to bed. And when I turned it off, I had CNN on and it was showing the whole story with Anderson Cooper, and it was on the K-pop phenomenon. And I was like, here is what is the biggest global music of any genre, and I don't know a single song from it. I don't even know that I'd know it if I heard it, except for the fact that it's in Korean. And could you imagine that in 1985? Could you imagine saying, I don't know what the biggest music of the in the world sounds like, because they were all artists that we knew. But the music industry has changed so much that if they were to do something like that, I might not even know half the bands that are performing. And I like to think of myself as somebody that keeps relatively current. Even if I don't know who they are by sound, I'm at least aware of their names. But I don't know that you could get away with doing something global like that anymore, because there's only a handful of artists that are global superstars anymore, or, you know, that at least would appeal to everybody enough that you could pull off a show like that. But I'll be interested in seeing that documentary when it comes out, because just the logistics of pulling off that day have always fascinated me. And the fact that, you know, it didn't become a regular thing. shows how difficult it was. Because if it was relatively easy to pull off, it would have become an annual event. But because it was such a singular thing, you know, it kind of lives on in legend. Anyway, 508-996-0500 if you want to comment on any of that. Again, tonight is the city council vote for the presidency. Tomorrow, win or lose, Councilor at Large Shane Burgo is going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour. And he will take your calls while he's here. We can ask him about some of these, what I call the Burgo boogeymen, the things that have been said that are really just things that he, as far as I know and as far as I've heard and can tell, has just said are ideas, things worth exploring. I mean, a lot is being made out of this idea of turning the sheriff's home into a reentry center for prisoners. And we haven't heard anything from Shane Burgo himself on that. That's just coming from Sheriff Paul Hero. From his comments to Chris McCarthy saying, you know, they'd had very, very, very preliminary conversations about that possibility. But that it's not even a plan. It's not even a proposal. It was just a conversation about an idea. But you've got people ready to run him off the council over it. And you don't even know what that plan actually is. You just know what it's been characterized as when it hasn't even been fleshed out in discussion yet. So I guess, you know, we'll ask that question. We'll ask what he envisions that as being. We'll ask what his position is on the idea of the so-called tent city. Has he reversed course on that, knowing that the mayor and the councilors are against it, knowing that the homeless service providers don't seem interested in it, knowing that the homeless population aren't interested in it? And I'll ask him, was he ever really for it to begin with? Or was it just, it's worth talking about? I talk about things here all the time on the radio that I might not want to see happen, but it's still worth having a conversation about. And that's the point. All right, I'm going to take a break here. We'll be back in a few moments. 508-996-0500. And of course, that song is what kind of broke down some of the barriers for hip hop, for rap. When that came out, when Run DMC's Raising Hell came out, and specifically that song, that's when you had a lot of folks who were all of a sudden listening to rap for the first time. I remember playing that for a friend of mine who I was like, what, 8 years old, 9 years old when that came out? 86, yeah, I would have been 8. And I had it on cassette in my big boom box and playing it for my parents, you know, a friend of my parents who was actually also my friend too. And he was in his 50s. And he was like, what is this? And he ended up, you know, liking Run DMC. I had to make a copy of the tape for him. So it kind of did break down a lot of those barriers and got people to listen to rap for the first time. And Run DMC was like, what? You want us to do what? And Rick Rubin is like, trust me on this. And look what happened. Became, and it was kind of like from the Run DMC docuseries that came out, it was like one of those things where they had already finished the album and he's like, we just need one like radio hit. And he proposed that and they were kind of like weirded out by it and weren't for it. And then he talked them into it and they did it. And similar situation to Jay-Z and 99 Problems, you know, where Rick Rubin was like, well, let's do this. And Jay-Z was like, all right, well, you're the genius. We'll trust you. And look at how it turned out. So anyway, 508-996-0500. A new scam we have to warn you about. There are people who are getting text messages. WCVB is reporting that these text messages were sent to residents of the city of Boston about unpaid parking fees, but that it's a scam, that it was not sent by the city of Boston. A phone number with an area code associated with Montreal sent an image that used the city's logo. The text in the image said their vehicle had an unpaid parking ticket and that it must be paid to avoid late fees. Finally, the fraudulent message instructs victims to visit a .com website to pay their bill, but the official city website is a .gov. So this is something that is happening to residents of Boston, but I saw a friend of mine share this story and they said the same thing happened to them. And they live in Plymouth. So they got a fraudulent text from the town of Plymouth telling them that they had to pay an overdue parking ticket. So it might just be that this is a bot or something that's spoofing wherever it is that the person lives, wherever the phone number is associated to. So you could get one of these as well. Just be aware. I got a parking ticket in Plymouth that I just didn't pay. I was like, no, I'm not paying this. I forget what it was, but I was like going to dispute it because the ticket was asinine. I think it was that I parked at like 4:30 when the meter went till 5 and my thing expired like 10 minutes before the time was up. I forget what it was, but it was dumb. I know it was raining. I remember that, a downpouring. And so I was going to fight it, and I forgot to and never paid it. And then when I went to go renew my registration, they're like, oh, you can't because you have this unpaid parking ticket in Plymouth. Oh, fine. I had to go and pay that online and then show them proof that I'd paid it. But at least that one was legitimate. And I so rarely, like, get parking tickets and so rarely have unpaid tolls that I don't even think about it. And then when you go to renew your license, renew your registration, I have to renew my registration in the spring. And I'm sure then they'll be like, oh, yeah, you have unpaid tolls that you just must have put on the desk and said, yeah, I'll pay that eventually. And then never did. Now that $4 toll is $40. Good job. And it would be easier if I just got the transponder, but I don't bother because I never go on toll roads enough to make it worth it. Thank God we don't have to use toll roads around here, right? Well, let's see what happens when those new bridges come in. The new Cape Cod bridges, there's talk of those being toll bridges. People would lose their minds if that was the case. They would lose their minds. I don't think it would stop people from going to the Cape, but my God, would people flip out about that? 508-996-0500. I was also, I mentioned, you know, Sheriff Heroux and the discussion that he was having with Counselor Burgo about this reentry center. But we also have the story late Friday. So if you missed it, it's at WBSM.com and on the app if you want to check it out. But on Friday, we had the story that Sheriff Heroux gave more details about the planned, I guess, interaction, we'll say, with ICE. He put out a press release saying, we'll help ICE, but we're not going to enforce immigration law. And it's consistent with what he's been saying and what he said on Chris's show. But his press releases are always kind of interesting to read. They're very much kind of almost stream of consciousness. You know, like I they're not exactly like a press release that a publication would want to take verbatim and just publish as is. It's more just like him getting his thoughts out. He's giving you quotes. And he said, I've heard from many concerned citizens that they insist I enforce federal immigration law. I even read one person say, get your badge, put on your cowboy hat, Sheriff. Get out there and arrest the illegals. Do your job, Sheriff. But Heroux said that there are several reasons why his office cannot get directly involved with federal immigration issues. He says, one, his office doesn't have the authority to enforce federal immigration law. That the 2017 Lund v. Commonwealth decision said that it is unlawful for state and local law enforcement agencies to arrest or detain people solely on the basis of an ICE detainer beyond the time the individual would otherwise be entitled to be released from state custody. And he said, sheriffs are bound to follow the law of the Commonwealth. I'm sorry, this is the Massachusetts Sheriffs Association that said, sheriffs are bound to follow the law of the Commonwealth and therefore cannot hold an individual based on an ICE detention request alone if that incarcerated individual is not subject to separate judicially issued detention orders. But Heroux also said that the Bristol County Sheriff's Office doesn't have the available staff, that they're already being stretched too thin overseeing 650 inmates, that they routinely force corrections officers to do overtime to fill necessary posts on housing units, and that bringing more people into the system would add to that stress that they're already experiencing. And then he also pointed out the fact that the office has previously been sued over its handling of ICE detainees. And he says, I rhetorically ask, why would I want to enter into a 287G contract when it didn't go well for us the last time? But he did say that his office will cooperate with ICE. He said, I, and by extension the entire BCSO, will cooperate and give ICE any and all information that we are legally allowed to share. The BCSO recognizes that ICE has an important and difficult job to do, and we are not going to make their job any more difficult by getting in their way or withholding information we possess from ICE. So, and this is what you've heard echoed from law enforcement, from local law enforcement, from state police, from sheriffs. Yes, we will share the information that we have if they're looking for somebody, but it's not our job to go and find that person because the immigration crime that they are accused of is not a crime that we are tasked with arresting people for. So as such, he's doing what the job is that he is supposed to do. And if they don't have the manpower, the person power to be able to cover the prisoners they already have, why would he be looking to add more into the population? The bottom line is, if enough law enforcement band together and say to the federal authorities, we're not enforcing this, then that means the federal authorities have to give more resources at that level to taking care of the issue. Five zero eight nine nine six zero five hundred. I'm going to take a break here. We'll be back in a few moments. Welcome back in. We're going to be going into the news in just a moment, but I don't know how much stock you put in award shows, but the Golden Globes were last night, and once again, The Bear has a win in a comedy category. Jeremy Allen White won Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy TV Series for The Bear. The Bear is not a comedy. I can't say this enough. I don't know why it keeps getting nominated in comedy categories. It is not a comedy. It's a drama that has occasionally funny moments. Stop entering it in the category of comedy. There's really good comedies that are losing out now. Because of the show, which is also overrated, is winning all the comedy awards. But I could say the same thing about Demi Moore's win for The Substance. She won Best Actress in a comedy or musical movie. And I don't think The Substance was a comedy. It was kind of a horror film. It was body horror. But